morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. I'm Steve Williamson. Across from me is Mike Costantino. It looks like we have a full studio today, Mike.
We do have a full studio, and we will not do any lawyer jokes this morning because we have
better not.
No. We have three lawyers, but they know the best jokes anyway. They know they'll do them ahead of us. We have three great lawyers, actually, from local area, and we're going to talk about impeachment. We're going to talk about the legal sides of impeachment. We got Mick Jordal, local lawyer from and member of Democrats at Red Rick on the board and whatnot. We have Rick Strom, some of you may have seen around, who's going to tell us a little bit about the history of impeachment. We got Jim Ledbetter, who's been a longtime supporter of the show from Ledbetter Law, the Ledbetter Law firm in Cottonwood, who's been a longtime supporter of the show. And we're going to get to the bottom of why the Democrats are so impotent is my word this morning here on Democratic Perspective on some things, except it's starting. Isn't it starting? Is it starting?
Yeah.
So we're going to start with Mick is going to give us, we want to make sure folks understand the process of impeachment. This is not really high political stuff. This is just how it works. And Mick, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, I've been both a prosecutor and defense attorney. I've gotten into civil rights and done some civil law work as well. So the whole kind of gamut. I think it's interesting. Impeachment, the process is really impeachment and removal. It's not just impeachment. There's a lot of misconception in the public out there that saying that if someone's impeached, a president, for instance, then they're removed. That's not the case.
Oh.
Impeachment is simply like a charge. It's like a criminal charge, kind of like a grand jury indictment. So there's a lot of misconception about that.
So the Congress is the House is sort of the grand jury. They indict the president. That's the impeachment. And then it goes to the Senate, and that's where the trial basically that leads to removal?
Yeah, there's a full trial in the Senate after a president is impeached. So there's been two presidents that have been impeached. Neither have been removed. And that would be, I think it's Andrew Johnson right after Lincoln. Mm-hmm. And then also Bill Clinton. So where does it come from? It comes from the Constitution, the whole impeachment and removal. It's Article 1, Section 2 gives the House of Representatives the authority to bring the charges. And the Section 3 of the same article allows the Senate to convict. So what are the grounds there? The grounds of impeachment are for treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. So that's for the impeachment charge, but also for the conviction.
Just to be clear, if the Senate convicted, would somebody walk into the Oval Office and slap handcuffs? I mean, I want to see this, and so do a lot of other people. So does he, or when you said, you got my attention when you said impeachment and removal, so does that happen? Do they perp walk him out of the...
Well, there ain't no handcuffs at that stage. Now, if he goes out and actually shoots somebody on Fifth Avenue, like he said he could, then under his theory, he could be arrested after being removed. Now, he's thinking he's immune from any criminal citation, any type. So he could basically, you know, take a machine gun to the cabinet members he doesn't like. And according to his theory, he could get away with it.
Aren't they arguing he can't even be investigated for charges that might lead to his removal or something? That's astonished.
I haven't heard that firsthand, but I think I've seen that in press reports, like can't be investigated.
But don't you think this is a big part of the confusion that people link high crimes and misdemeanors to actual crimes, and they're not actual crimes? I mean, looking at the dictionary in 1858, it said high crimes and misdemeanors are malfeasance in office, misconduct. It's not linked to a crime. It's not a criminal charge. It is acting inappropriately while in office. Because if we go back to 1787, while they're drafting the Constitution, there's great dialogue between Madison and Jefferson and Monroe over these issues, and Mason especially, about what does high crimes and misdemeanors mean. And right now, we look at the term misdemeanor wasn't a punishable offense of a year or less in jail at that time. That's a subsequent thing. So high crimes and misdemeanors is really taken from the impeachment process that's been around since the 14th century in England. And one of my colleagues here, Rick, has really spent some time investigating that.
Well, thank you, Jim. A couple of things that are very important about this is that the framers were very, very concerned about tyrants. They hated the monarchy. I mean, remember, we're in a position now in 1787 where no one else has created a republic before of this size. And they're trying to figure out the best way to protect against some sort of terrible incursion by the crown or some dominant force like an executive president. No one knows really what a president's going to be like.
I want to underline that. It was so important to them to have this in the Constitution. I mean, this isn't Article 5. It's Article 1.
Article 1.
You know, this was really an important thing. And this is, as Jim said, they argued about this a long time. Where did that argument take us?
And in particular, Franklin was concerned about the idea of what would happen if we had a Charles the First. Charles I, everyone will remember, is the fellow in 1649 who basically subverted Parliament. He dissolved Parliament, would not call Parliament for 11 years. That resulted in Oliver Cromwell and a lot of other people who were very anxious about the rights of Parliament to be equal to those of the monarch, getting together and creating a revolution. The revolution actually was over the failure of the king to recognize the voice of the people. So what Franklin wanted was a specific provision in the Constitution that would allow for the removal of people who were pedantic, who were fools, who were liars, who were cheats, and who were criminals. So you notice when Mick said the definition of what that involves, that includes things that are a little hazy, a little ambiguous. There's a lot of play in the joints when we're talking about what constitutes an impeachable offense. By the way, in 1649, not only was Charles I impeached, he was tried and executed, and that gave rise to the Oliver Cromwell, the interregnum. The monarchy was restored in 1660, but never with the same absolute power that it had in the time of Charles.
The other thing is Charles's act caused basically a civil war in England, right?
Exactly right.
Huge casualties, and we're not recognizing Parliament and deciding that he would rule on his own caused a civil war that a lot of people died in.
You're like not informing the House of certain overseas activities, but that...
Well, that was part of the indictment. He was accused of two things, Charles I. One was that he had subverted English democracy by not accounting for Parliament and the voice of the people. The second thing was that he had gone overseas to European allies to try to find funding for eliminating his enemies.
Am I incorrect in saying this is sound and real, familiar?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
That's all new to me. I know the man, and I know the Oliver Cromwell. I know all of that, but I didn't know it was about the dissolving Parliament, and I didn't know he went over and tried to get aid and money from basically enemies of English democracy.
The reason why he had to do that was because Parliament, he didn't call Parliament. He knew Parliament wouldn't give it to him.
Right.
So he said, hell with Parliament, I'll just go over and talk to my buddies and I'll get a fund up and we'll do what we want to do.
All right. So how are we going to move forward here on, my goal is to see him, I like the removal part, because I believe every hour of every day, as a trumping man, we can say his name. It's not he who must not be named. Every minute of every day, when the New York con man, when the real estate mogul remains in office, the republic suffers. The democracy is declining. Fascism is growing. Every minute of every day, we have him enriching his family. We have him enriching his friends at the cost of American taxpayers. This is the very definition of corruption. And yet, here it is, 3+ years into this, and nothing has changed. And then maybe it took him a while to get going. Why are the Democrats so? Where are the Democratic lawyers? His lawyers have been protecting him for 3 years now, with things like I told you, I mentioned before the show. That they've been protecting him from obstruction of justice. They've been protecting him from huge what I think are crimes. How come we can't do that?
So the process in the House now. What I want to raise is what Mike's talking about. The process in the House, it seems slow and deliberate. It's being held behind closed doors. Why is that? I mean, Republicans are making a big issue of it, but that's they're preparing the indictment of the president. That's what's happening.
Yeah, actually, it's the investigative stage right now. You've got three subcommittees that are investigating this at the direction of Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, and they have every right to do it in private if they want. You know who adopted the rules of impeachment in 2015? John Boehner, and it was adopted by the full House at that time, which was Republican dominated. So these rules allow for the very investigative first part of the thing to be done in private if they want. And that has been I just saw something by Trey Gowdy. You know, he was potentially going to be one of the lawyers for Trump. Apparently he's not. He was saying, yes, it should be held in private. He calls, the investigative stage, if you open that up, completely, it will be a complete circus.
I saw the speech. It was a good argument for having the investigative in private because people will reveal things in private.
That's why I suspected it should be in private. Also, it's not really that private, right, Mick? I mean, 120 different Congress people can sit in on the hearings if they want, something like that.
Yeah, there's 47 Republicans that serve on these committees. They are all asking questions. If you hear the president's talking points, it's as if no Republican knows what's going on there. But there's 47 Republicans on these committees asking questions. Now, there's going to be a public aspect to this, too. Once, the interviews are done, there's going to be a public aspect of this in the Judiciary Committee. So they'll call witnesses, and both sides will get to interrogate the witnesses. The rules of procedure, again, are up to each branch, the House of Representatives, and also up to the Senate.
So they have to build a case now. They're investigating to build a case. And we see the conflict where the president will tell them you cannot testify, and Congress will give you a subpoena. So what's the constitutional, Jim, situation on that? President says, don't testify. You're going to be testifying against me. I get caught. And Congress says, here's the subpoena. You've got to come.
Well, frankly, that's new in our history. The notion that an executive will ignore Congress and Congress's duty to investigate and keep in check the powers of the presidency, that's new. Remember, Bill Clinton gave grand jury testimony. Bill Clinton gave a DNA sample. He responded to subpoenas. So we forget, and this notion now that people shouldn't respond to subpoenas is frankly a violation of the law, violation of the Constitution. And it's all political theater, right? Because it's obstruction of justice. But it's political theater, like of the 40 people who just, the 40 Republican congressmen who just stormed into these closed door meetings, 12 of them, for God's sakes, were members of the committee. They could just walk in. And so they were invited guests. But they go on national news to make this big display about it being their own committee where they could be sitting in there asking questions, being closed doors. It wasn't closed to them. So, again, all of this is political theater and drama, but it is obstruction of justice because justice requires that you respond to a subpoena. As this goes through the court system, we will see time and again the Trump administration losing that argument because it's so important. Under Nixon, they tried to stop and not provide documents at that time before his impeachment came down. But, of course, ultimately, that administration also responded to the subpoenas. So the history is you take subpoenas seriously and you respond to subpoenas because Congress has the authority to issue subpoenas. Oh. Otherwise, as Mick says, it's obstruction.
We're listening to Jim Ledbetter and local attorneys today on impeachment. We got Jim Ledbetter, we got Rick Strom, we got Mick Jordal, three attorneys in the same room talking about impeachment. We're getting to the bottom of this.
All right. The point that Mike raised was we have a tremendously lawless, and this is for all three of you, we have a tremendously lawless president who just ignores subpoenas, but he violates the law. He goes over and gets Russians to help him and so forth and so on, and now he's playing games by trying to force people in Ukraine. He's violating all these laws, but it's more than that. He seems to have a disregard for anything that keeps him from doing and saying anything he wants to say. So what do you do in that situation, Jim, where he doesn't He doesn't care about legal precedents. He doesn't care about the Constitution. These things are just impediments for him.
Well, that'll be just more aspects of the impeachment inquiry, and that'll just expand the impeachment process. I mean, that's why they pulled back on the G7 going to Doral, because that would have been another basis for the impeachment charges to say you're self-enriching, bringing the G7 to your own golf
resort.
And so that would have been another basis for impeachment. So they are thinking about this. They are curbing things and withdrawing things because, of course, he said he would never do that. It was the best deal. But, you know, the truth is, because of the Trump brand toxicity, Doral's number of people coming to the resort has dropped by 70%. It's in financial trouble. So they wanted to boost that. They want to do this and have a problem with the so-called emoluments clause. And that's the president's word, the so-called emoluments clause. Well, it was one of the very bases for impeachment. And that's why it's in the Constitution that if a foreign power assists you in some way in your presidency, that is a very basis for impeachment.
And it's not the so-called emoluments. It's the actual cause.
And it's actually, along with what we're talking about impeachment generally, it's also in Article 1. Again, one of these things that was so much concern for the founders, that they didn't want to have any foreign interference. Remember, you have a fragile republic. In 1787, the population of our country was 4 million. They were all within maybe 50 to 75 miles of the coastline from Maine down to Georgia. The idea that Spain or France or England rearming could come back and take over America and destroy the Republic was very, very strong. So this notion of cooperating with foreign powers is a very real problem. What I think is, when we flash forward to modern time, what I think is the biggest problem that you have is that foreign policy is so dang complicated. It requires a lot of diplomacy and a lot of balancing of interests. The difficulty that you have with this quid pro quo stuff is that once you're in a position where you make an off-the-record deal with another head of state, and that head of state goes ahead and does what you want him to do, that opens you up for blackmail. Again, under the table. Behind the backs of the American people. This is a $391 million tax package that the Ukrainians knew was tough to get because Ukrainians are fighting the Russians, and the Russians are the pets of Trump. Right. So Zelensky, who is the president of Ukraine, was very nervous about whether he was going to get his money, and he was especially ripe for this overture that came from Giuliani. Now, remember, Bolton didn't want any part of this Ukraine deal.
Right.
This was engineered by Giuliani and other people off the record.
Well, he recognized its illegality,
Well, that's an interesting question because he's under subpoena. And as Jim said, the White House has an order saying that executive privilege bars him from testifying because he was part of the administration. But the problem was that you had an axis of trying to control diplomacy. You had these guys who were Trump's henchmen going over to Ukraine, working out a deal, and they knew that this guy needed the $391 million to fight the Russians.
Let's back out of the weeds a little bit. Why can't we punish any of these people who ignore a subpoena? If I break the law, somebody comes, takes me away. Whether it's FBI or Sedona Police Department. So these people are breaking the law. So the Constitution has the force of law, yes or no?
Well, you have something called contempt of Congress. One practical problem is Congress doesn't have a little jail in the basement there yet. You know,
place to put them.
Well,
I don't
know.
Put them.
You know, the executive branch runs the federal jail, so I don't.
The executive branch is supposed to enforce the congressional.
Yeah, but we've got a co-opted Justice Department. Yeah. That are refusing to take action. And Bill Barr was selected because he had written a paper that says you cannot charge a sitting president. That was his law review position. And so when you are interviewing to replace a Jeff Sessions, who was a guy that was actually not following the direction of the president and doing his job as Attorney General of the United States.
Amazing.
You look for a guy out there. Yeah, it was amazing that it was Jeff Sessions.
Yeah,
but you look for a guy out there who was willing to say, you can't charge a sitting president with a crime. That was a thesis from law school. That made him the top of the heap. That made him the number one candidate for selection for this process. That made him the guy to discount the Mueller report. That made him the guy to overlook the enforcement, and that's the enforcement arm on the failure to follow the law, the obstruction of justice, and that's why he's there. And right now, it's co-opted. So it's going to come from the courts, this enforcement, and we're going to have a constitutional crisis. It's set up for that. The executives are not following the legislative mandates of the Constitution, which, for goodness sakes, if you're on a school board, you take an oath to follow the Constitution. When you're the President of the United States and every sitting member of the House and Senate, you've taken an oath to follow the Constitution. So oaths apparently don't mean anything anymore.
What's amazing to me is that Barr also, he refused to take any action on the whistleblower issue. The whistleblower filed his complaint to... And that was reviewed by the Attorney General. The Attorney General squelched the whole thing. So, and it only came out into the public when this whistleblower followed other channels.
Some reporters have said there's something strange going on in Barr's Justice Department. But you pointed out that he auditioned for the job of protecting the president, and the president gave it to him, and he's doing exactly what he said he would do, which is no matter what the charges are or the truth of the situation, he's... Donald Trump's defense lawyer.
And there is no justice in the Justice Department. Let's just be candid.
That's the issue. The AG is supposed to represent the people. The AG is supposed to represent law and order. The AG is to make sure that the Justice Department functions smoothly and independently of any kind of influence by the executive branch. You know, this is the same guy, Barr, who refused to turn over all of the Mueller investigation. Here you have Mueller's investigation that's got so much more to offer than what was presented to the American public, especially in these three areas of impeachment that we're talking about. Barr prevented that from going over. So the Democrats sued, and as of last Friday, there was a judge, District Court Judge Howell, who wrote a 75-page opinion scathing Barr, saying that all of this material is fair game. All this material has to be turned over.
And it is amazing that the Republicans took such a strong position that the entire Mueller report, funded by the American people, couldn't be released. And now they take the position that you can't do closed-door hearings. I mean, it's so inconsistent as to almost be a joke. Frankly, if the whole Mueller report were out there, we probably would have avoided this impeachment process at this juncture. It would have prompted things at an earlier stage.
Well, why? Then that begs the question. Why aren't the Republicans? This is what happened in the last time with Nixon. Why aren't the responsible Republicans pulling Trump aside and saying, time to go?
Well, they might be. You never know. I mean, here's the thing. If you're thinking as a Republican, Mike Pence is a very clean-looking chap. I mean, he is. He has many, many problems. I think he's a bigot, and I don't think he's suitable to be president personally. But in terms of his comparison with Trump,
yes,
Pence might be a safe bet,
yes,
particularly if you have Pence as the president in 2020.
If you're Lindsey Graham or you're Mitch McConnell, Trump pulls higher in your own states than they do. That's the answer. He has more support in their individual states than they themselves do. So they're vulnerable to challenging him. It's about politics. It's about keeping their job. It's not about doing the right thing. It's about, you know, keeping yourself in a position of power.
But that said, you got rank-and-file Republicans supporting this criminal president. You got elected official Republicans supporting the criminal administration. How did this happen? How did we get to this? I mean, I hear this all the time. People throw their hands up in despair and say, how did we get to this? I mean, how did this happen?
Go ahead, Mick. That's a biggie. That's the biggie. How did we ever get in this situation?
Yeah,
I think, I mean, if you look at the rise of authoritarians anywhere, it's not about the rule of law. That crumbles, and then it becomes the cult of personality.
Okay.
And that's what we have now, is the cult of personality here, and it's taking over. I mean, all we have to do is look at the horrible examples around the world, and I'm not going to, you know, mention some of the worst of them, because we're not there yet, but we will be if we don't push back. So,
yeah, and he admires just these guys. Basically, folks, there's now a whole slew of, they're not quite dictators, they're authoritarian presidents who manipulate the structure of their governments to stay in power. And you're talking about Hungary and Russia and Philippines, everywhere. So,
North Korea.
North Korea, yeah. So, all right, let's go to Jim. What can we do? Mike wants to know, what can we do? We see this process. We have to wait for Schiff and the committees to get to the bottom of the evidence. And what's happening, at least my interpretation, folks, is we're getting more and more evidence that he's guilty.
Well, that said, I want to talk about Adam Schiff, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. I want to talk about Nancy Pelosi. What can these people do for us, Jim Ledbetter? What can they do?
Intelligence Committee first.
Intelligence Committee, I'm sorry.
What we need to do is be patient, because it is a process. It is a process in which one side of the process is trying to slow the process and trying to keep any bit of evidence from coming forward. The other side has to work through, and normal channels would be the Justice Department would be directing responses to the subpoenas. We know that's not happening. So now it's becoming increasingly a judicial process, which is a slow process. It is going to happen. There is going to be an impeachment that's going to come out of the House, and then it's going to be a slowed down process in the Senate, because Mitch McConnell has said he will hold a trial, but the trial is not going to be what the normal process of that the Constitution anticipated. So we are going to have a real constitutional crisis. It's coming. It's coming just like you can see a light at the end of the tunnel coming at you. It's a train.
You
it's
mean
coming.
Describe that crisis. Giving the real trial won't really examine the actual evidence, that they'll just say he's not guilty for some, I don't even know what their arguments are at this point.
So the players that are in place have kept the American public from knowing significant facts, for example, the Mueller report. They keep supporting the fact that the American public doesn't get access through Congress to information. People can't testify. Documents can't come forward. All of that information, transcripts can't be released. Only redacted transcripts that they select that can be released. It is going to be a constitutional crisis, because we have these two powers that one is choosing to ignore the Constitution they agreed to uphold. And that's the executive branch right now. That is the Trump administration. And so we're going to have this crisis. It's going to come out in the Senate. Do I think it'll be a fair process? No. Because if it were, we would have different people in place, and we would have different approaches to the Mueller report. Different things would have happened. Barr would be acting differently. But the people who disagree with the president get removed. They get taken out of the cabinet. It is like a mafia organization where all of those people who speak up to the president, they disappear from the organization. It's happened dozens of times in this administration. So will there be a problem? Will there be a crisis? Do I think he gets removed and the Senate votes for him? That means a swing of 26 senators who, again, the president polls better in their states than they do. I don't think that changes.
Actually, an interesting thing, if this constitutional crisis comes about, is what is the role of the Supreme Court? Because traditionally they have said it's a political question. They want to keep their hands off of that type of determination. But it's not conclusive at all. Like, let's say that the procedures, there's very little set forth in the Constitution. How does this run? How does it work? It's really not set forth. And each house has the right to set its own rules. So at what point will the Supreme Court get involved? It's really hard to tell. And if they do determine to get involved, these are appointees of Trump, two in the last few years.
Right.
How is that going to sway the equation?
Rick, so we're all praying for Ruth Bader Ginsburg, 86-year-old Ruth, to keep taking her Wheaties or whatever.
So, Rick, what's your thought on this?
Well, we've been praying for Ruth for a long time. Keep praying. The interesting thing, I think, is that you have, when we get to the Senate, a very unusual set of circumstances. You're going to have a lot of public information. You're going to have a lot of evidence available. You're going to have a lot of testimony taken under oath. It's going to be very difficult, even if your president polls better than you do, to vote against all of that evidence without appearing to be a total hypocrite. But I'm sure they're capable of doing that.
Yeah.
But I do think that that's something that's going to make some people, as we've seen already, some of the Republicans with a conscience, resign before they actually have to do the vote. That's going to create some other fallout that we haven't even considered yet. The person who's going to be very pivotal in determining how this trial works will be the Chief Justice, because the Constitution requires that he's the sitting judge. So Judge
Roberts,
Judge John Roberts, will be our judge. And then the issue is, what do you do with discovery motions? I mean, in a traditional kind of lawsuit, if we have a problem with the other side sandbagging or not disclosing evidence that the rules say have to be disclosed to the opposition, we can go to the judge. The judge can fashion an order telling the other side to release the documents that need to be released.
Is Roberts going to do that?
Well, we don't even know if Roberts has that authority. Do we have to go outside of Roberts and go to the district court to ask for resolution of things that are in the Senate impeachment trial?
Just real quickly, this non-lawyer's opinion of Chief Justice Roberts is that push comes to shove, he understands the Constitution and does the right thing.
He has followed the law.
Yep. He has followed the law. So in answer to my own question, and you guys apparently agree, if it comes down to like it looks like it's going to go to the Supreme Court, comes down to Roberts being the pivotal vote, we're going to be saved.
Well, I think what I get from all these gentlemen, Mike, is that this is going to be a long and messy process. It's not easy. You have people with tremendous amount of authority doing every single thing they can think of to try to stymie the process. And the reason is because it's sort of like Nixon tapes. Basically, Trump's been caught red-handed, and every bit of evidence we see just reinforces the fact that Trump is guilty. And that presents you a problem. If you're a Republican, the man is obviously guilty as charged. And so that's, I think, the reason they're attacking the process, because they don't have a defense of him except to say, well, everybody does this, and that's not going to fly, right?
Well, I don't know if you've heard the old attorney adage, if you don't have the facts, argue the law. If you don't have the law, argue the facts. If you don't have the facts and the law, pound the table. So I think you're seeing a lot of table pounding right now, and a lot on the procedure. And the question is, is there anything the Democrats are doing that is giving ammunition to the Republicans? I think Jim's right. We're going to have to be patient. I think private hearings are appropriate at this stage, but then it's going to have to go public. And then you will see a circus.
Well, that will impact the polls. Once those hearings become public, then the polls will start to go down, in my opinion. I hope.
We're already there. A majority of the American people support impeachment.
Yeah.
Already there.
The other thing is, I noticed when the Republican arguments are such grandstanding thing when we get into public. We've seen the hearings that we've seen where the Republicans are doing their thing. They do everything they can to confuse things. And there's tremendous amount of grandstanding. There's, you know, in the trials I was on as a jury, it's always somebody who's not there who's guilty of the crime. Right. You know, my client is less guilty than this guy who over there who's not around. I don't know. So, Rick?
I just did that one last week.
Yeah. You know, right?
Against me, I might add.
I lost. Justice prevailed.
Oh, that's it. Justice prevailed.
But to simplify and make very directly your good point, it's like the guy who goes into court and says, everybody was speeding that day, Your Honor. Well, yeah. He was still speeding, and the defense said everybody else was speeding, like what Mick Mulvaney said, get over it. Everybody does this. Everybody does quid pro quo. Get over it. No, you've been caught red-handed. Quid pro quo is illegal, and it's such a joke to say, all right, well, no one said quid pro quo, so therefore there's not quid pro quo. It's like saying, I'm stabbing Mike Cosentino right now with a knife, and unless I say murder, 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 I haven't committed murder, because I have to use the word murder to make it murder. Yeah. And it's just an insane notion of everybody else does it, therefore we're not guilty. That's bizarre.
Well, yeah, I have to, you guys did this in 34 minutes. We want to, I want to do the impossible. We have, so look ahead, we have a Democratic administration. What are they going to have to do to put this, we're talking so much chaos for so long in so many fields. Environment, healthcare, we're talking almost the complete destruction of a functioning society, a government. What does a Democratic administration do to reconstruct the USA?
You have to reconstruct the Justice Department, for example, sort of because it is deeply perverted. But essentially all the other departments have been, they've had the war we see, folks, against the American diplomats by the Trump administration is the same war against all the experts and the scientists and stuff in the government. And Mike's point is, like, it's going to take time just to get back to where we were before Donald Trump was president, right?
Yeah, I think the worst thing that Trump has done is destroy our institutions.
And faith in our institutions.
And faith in our institutions. You look at almost any institution, whether it's EPA, State Department, all kinds of areas, labor. News media tearing down the fourth estate, is that what they call the press, I think?
Yes.
Yeah, of that. And so part of it, I think, is rebuilding those, but then also accountability, because, the election law is very clear. Trump didn't just do something that was immoral or whatever. It's not his personal behavior like against Clinton. I believe he broke a law. It's the federal election law. It prohibits the solicitation of anything of value from a foreign entity to influence an election. And certainly of value is a complete investigation that you want. I mean, how much money do those Ukrainian lawyers cost the Ukrainian government? I mean, it's really clear. I mean, this is not a freebie. So I think part of it is accountability. If you look at other nations, there are other nations who have tried and convicted their former heads of state for criminal acts, whether it's bribery or other things. You can look at Berlusconi in Italy. You can look at various Latin American
Indonesia
folks. Indonesia, yeah.
But anyway, Trump is ginning people up to very violent feelings. I agree with you, particularly about the press. And this is not a particularly legal issue, but turning the press into the enemy. In other words, his behavior is so bad, he's had to attack systematically all the American institutions that would call him to account, right, Jim?
And make no mistake, and this sounds overly dramatic, but the next election is for the soul of this country. That's where we're at.
That I think that's needs, and we can't say that often enough, that the participation in the next, whether you're a millennial, whether you're Ruth Bader Ginsburg age, we need you. I know that there's more activity on the NAU campus than there's been in generations. I'm looking around here. We have some guests in the studio that have a direct knowledge of this. But it's the same thing. I'm getting, my little Democratic group at the Red Rooster Cafe, 6 o'clock every third Tuesday in Cottonwood. We have these people wandering in like from a battlefield.
They want hope. It is about soul, and not in the sense that like was raised in the Catholic Church, that sense of soul. But Trump doesn't have a soul. He doesn't have fellow feeling to an extraordinary degree.
Are you calling your president a sociopath?
Yes, and that as in his position as the president, he's able to really deeply destroy our legal institutions.
Well, part of this, I think, has to do with how far correct thinking people, critical thinking people, whether they're right wing, left wing, centrist, are willing to go. And I think that sometimes, as partisans, we have to be very careful about painting with too broad of a brush. There are some very, very strong, strong thinkers who are conservative Republicans.
I said the other day that the Republicans are tired of democracy. They're ready for oligarchy. They want the rich to rule the United States just like they do in Russia.
Oligarchy's been ruling the United States for a long time.
Okay. you and I can understand that over a glass of single malt, but on the air today, we're going to pretend that there's still a scrap left of the Republic and that Republicans aren't, just like a lawyer, you're arguing both sides of the issue here. One's are Republicans tired of democracy?
Take a look at the Wall Street Journal. I mean, you can't imagine a more conservative paper in this country, but the editorial page from time to time dips into the notion that Trump ought to go. And not in so many words, but in ways that would suggest to you that they're not in his camp. I think people who are conservative generally want stability and they want people to get along.
Let me ask you this in the last 4 or 5 minutes. The economy, that will affect the polls.
That's the problem. That's the problem. If the economy is strong in 2020 and Trump does not get convicted by the Senate, I fear that he'll be reelected.
That's Rick. Mick, is the economy going to tank?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball about the economy. I mean, I just don't know. I think there's a really good chance there will be a recession, but that can't save us. I mean, what we need to do is get out in the streets. And I'm probably around too many Democrats, but I mean, they're
can hurt you, you know.
There's like incredible motivation and enthusiasm. People are already pounding on doors. I'm knocking on doors, you know. And this is more than a year before the election. I mean, we're out there and motivated.
You live in a town of 10,000 and has people on the street corner every Friday holding up signs for.
What I see, though, the problem is I see the Republicans who know how bad Trump is absenting themselves, Jim, from the thing. You know, it's like, you know, the guy's bad and you get your butt out of there but you don't make a big grandstanding thing about it. And so the good Republicans, good conservatives, the ones who have really deep American
values, the ones who agree with us,
are leaving, but they're not. And the ones who are staying are, what are they?
Well, and it's, again, such a bizarre process. Even coming into discussion, the Republicans are getting rid of primary elections. How is that possible? In this country, to make a decision state by state that you'll give up the primary process because you don't want any dissent as to your existing president, to go into the whole process and not allow the Bill Wells of the world to have a forum to speak up and say, I'm a true conservative, and what's going on here is fundamentally wrong. To stymie those voices inside the political process, frankly, millennials are listening and younger people are listening. They are doing long-term sustained damage to the Republican Party. And for decades now, they're going to be repairing that and trying to dig out from the hole that they're digging just as fast as they can.
I have millennial friends that have written off 2020. They think 2024, the chaos has just turned them off to the point where they see no hope. They see guys like me supporting Joe Biden, and they see no, quite frankly, relief there. They see another corporate Democrat that's so moderate, he's hard for them to tell the difference between Joe Biden and the Republicans. So
I think the thing is we keep kind of begging conservative Republicans. I'm not sure, Jim, these people are actually conservatives in the sense that when I was in college, we used to sit and argue with the young Republicans. We used to have debates. We used to have serious discussions, philosophical discussions and political discussions. Trump's supporters seem to be something else other than American conservatives to me.
But on the other hand, I guess I agree with Rick, too. I never thought I would like John Bolton at all.
Ever.
But what he said is, this is a drug deal and I don't want any part of it. I mean, obviously, he was being euphemistic about
it.
But there are conservatives out there that do follow the rule of law. We deal with them in the courts all the time. Some of my people I really respect are people arguing the opposite side of things and argue it well and follow the rules. They still exist. You know, Bolton, it might be Chuck Grassley on whistleblower statute, things like that. Even what's his name from South Carolina? Lindsey Graham. I mean, he's opposed to Trump on
but
the
it's
Middle
not
East.
Long enough, and it's not sustained enough to affect the polls as much as we would like it yet. We've been listening, folks, to Jim Ledbetter of Ledbetter Law Firm of Cottonwood. We're talking about impeachment. You can find this, don't forget, on our website, bbid.org. You can listen to this very complicated show again. Rick Strom, these are all local attorneys. Mick Jordal, Rick Strom, Jim Ledbetter. We've been talking about impeachment. We think we've come up with the answers here. We have the map for
if you have any questions, folks, go on our website and send us questions. If you have questions about this, send it to us and we'll try to answer it. We'll contact the lawyers. We'll try to see what anything we can do to clarify for you what the process is.
As Jim Ledbetter said, this is regarding the soul of the nation here, so it's an important thing. And there is a donate button, by the way. Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org. Verde Valley Independent Democrats.org. BVID.org. You can find the MP3 of this show. You can find, you can ask us questions and you can throw us a few shekels, as a popular term these days, would maybe our, and we want to thank Democrats at the Red Rocks. for helping us. We want to thank all of our supporters over the years for helping us out here on Democratic Perspective. Thanks, folks. See you next time.
Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.